Today's March 18, 2003, and the first bill that we will be considering is House Bill 2547, and enter into a work session on House Bill 2547. Members, we have the dash 7 amendments that are proposed for your consideration.
Dash 7?
Yeah, they should get your space for Timber Hurt.
And I think what I'd like to do for everyone's information and benefit is to call forward Gail Atterbury to explain those proposed amendments. And while Ms. Atterbury is coming up, just to clarify again, colleagues, today we will provide opportunity for both, or for questions that you may have on this bill, and you can ask those questions of Ms. Atterbury from Right to Life, or Maura Roche, the advocate for the Pro-Choice Coalition, and we'll just kind of proceed on at that point and see. See where this takes us. So, Ms. Atterbury?
Okay, thank you, Representative Doyle, Chairman Doyle. I just got the dash 7s along with the rest of you, and so I can tell you what the dash 4 says with the addition of what the dash 7 was to say. I'm looking at it myself at the moment. To walk you through it, if you have your bill itself, 2547, on page 2, line 2, the final bill will read under B, the medical risks associated with the proper abortion, period. The including but not limited to with the different type of risks are no longer enumerated. Down on...
If I can interrupt a minute.
Yes.
For the committee members, earlier today, the committee staff routed around to your offices the dash 4 amendments. And on the third page of that amendment actually was the Hand and Gross version of House Bill 2547. That might make it easier for you to follow along. And then we can see where the dash 7s kind of fit in with that as well. So...
So how do you want me to proceed, like I am?
As you are, but just more for information, if you folks have that hand engrossed version, yeah, that might just make it easier.
A question, Mr. Chair.
Sure, Representative Butterhart.
I think of you. Is this the idea that we're combining the 4 and the 11?
4 and 7?
4 and 7?
Yeah, 4 and 7 does equal 11, but no, we're only... dash 7s incorporate the dash 4s.
Ah.
And I think we had some additional information just come in on the dash 7s. And I mean, just as an example, the very first amendment that talks on the dash 7s discusses a change on page 1, which is not on the dash 4 amendment. And so, but I know in the... So I don't know what minor corrections might be made on the dash 7s yet. That
I see what on that very first one, which is kind of awfully confusing. On the very first one of the dash 7s, what it's doing is making the adjustment for having made the dash 7s. So if you look on line 6 on your page 1, it says, as used in sections 1 to 8, well, 8 will be gone, as we see in the dash 7. So it says you're putting a 7 there instead of an 8.
Right.
It's kind of confusing to catch up all at once on this. But
ultimately, the dash 7s, I thought, were to just eliminate Section 8.
That's correct. That's correct. And that's why there is a new thing in the, that is brand new to me, but that I just caught on to that. What I'm doing is it in the orderly way of going through the bill and saying how it should be. So back quickly to page 2, line 2, to repeat, line 2, that little subsection B will only say the medical risk associated with the proposed abortion, period. There will be no longer any more sentence. Down in line 35 on that same page, there was just a typo error, so we are saying we're adding the word mailed, saying that by certified mail with delivery restricted to the female mailed at least 72 hours. So that's just basically correcting a typo. Then we are deleting the entire Section 8 in the dash 7s, just flat gone. And then we are inserting on page 4, dash 8s are on page 4, we are then there's a little confusion as to how it's written here, but what it actually means is we are inserting a brand new section that hasn't been there before, and then I think he's rejuggling a little bit. And the new section will say, the center may not, without the consent of the health care provider, disclose the identity of the health care provider who performed or attempted to perform an induced termination of pregnancy. And it continues, the center may not, without the consent of the health care provider, make information available in a manner that permits a person to identify a reporting health care provider. And that's basically what the dash 7s do. It does a little bit of rejuggling of that one section, but it's nothing else has changed except for the order of events.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Ms. Atterbury? So the Ms. Atterbury, then the two main items, I guess, that were deleted, not adding the, I guess, the different potential medical risks.
That's correct. We felt that would be, when we're saying the medical risks associated with the proposed pregnancy, it was in some way redundant to enumerate them.
Okay. And then on the removal of the ability to recover damages for professional negligence.
Yes.
Does that then, you know, give this bill any teeth? I mean, are the...
Yes, we understand by much legal counsel that any time a law is broken, that there is recourse to the person that has been harmed. And that would, of course, be the woman that was not given the proper informed consent. And there were many, many sections, many parts of Section 8 that were redundant also, because she already has the ability to sue a doctor that does not abide by existing law. The Board of Medical Examiners already have the ability, if they wish, to reprimand a physician.
Okay. And I guess with the elimination of Section 8 as well, it also eliminates the, I guess, the issue relating to the Board of Nursing and the Board of Medical Examiners.
That's correct. They're all gone. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you.
And before I call up Ms. Roche, anybody have questions for Maura Roche?
Well, at the moment, Mr. Chair, I'm still trying to digest the changes from the dash 7s.
Okay. Ms. Roche, would you like to comment on the amendments? Okay. Okay. We, colleagues are looking for a member of the Legislative Fiscal Office to come in as well. We understand that one of the individuals that has been responsible for the legislative fiscal analysis on this bill is still at lunch and is expected back any minute. And what I'd like to do then is I think before we consider these amendments and you know, get a commentary first from the Legislative Fiscal Office on that analysis, and then we can get make some decisions at that point on what direction we're going to go. And then, so to do that, Just a recess then. We'll just recess then on this work session until we get Legislative Fiscal Office in, and we'll then move on to the other resolution, okay? So we'll recess 2547 work session and now enter into a public hearing on House Resolution Number 2. And on House Resolution 2, this is proposed by Representative Krupp. He is actually next door in a committee meeting. He'll be over here in just a moment. But I understand Jenny Huntington is here from the Jory office. Chief, go ahead, Jenny, and you can provide testimony.
Thank you, Chair Doyle and committee. I have a prepared written... Oh, I need to enter.
Well, first, I think you can give the prepared testimony to our committee assistant. And then you can go ahead and provide that testimony now on the record.
All right. My name is Jenny Huntington. I'm from the House Majority Office, and I will be reading a prepared written statement by House Majority Leader Representative Tim Knope. I am writing to you to express my strong support for H.R. 2. While I wanted to appear before you in person today, scheduling conflicts prevented me from doing so. Therefore, I am submitting this written testimony for your review and consideration. We are at a critical juncture in global affairs, and it is important that we, the elected members of the Oregon State Legislature, show support for our nation's leaders and protectors. If passed, H.R. 2 will solidify and make public our commitment to President George W. Bush, his cabinet members, and the dedicated men and women of the United States Armed Forces in their efforts to remove Saddam Hussein from power. While no one looks with favor or excitement at the prospect of war, Saddam Hussein has violated the basic rights of humanity. He has abused his dictatorship in order to tyrannize Iraqi citizens. His regime threatens global security, and he has developed weapons of mass destruction in direct violation of the United Nations Security Council resolution. Our commander-in-chief has been faced with decisions we cannot begin to fathom, and Saddam Hussein has left him with no alternatives. We must unite as Americans to support our president and support his decision. Most of all, we must unite as Americans to support the hundreds of thousands of troops defending our freedoms and defending the rights of humanity for those oppressed by Hussein. I strongly encourage your I vote on this resolution. As President George W. Bush said in his State of the Union address earlier this year, the liberty we prize is not America's gift to the world, it is God's gift to humanity. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Jeff Krupp. And while Representative Krupp comes forward, there are Dash 2 amendments as well, colleagues, that should be before you that I'm hoping Representative Krupp will speak to as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Good to be with you today. I'm State Representative Jeff Krupp from House District 17. And before you, you have a House resolution that I drafted some time ago, actually, for the purpose of trying to recognize and show support for our government's direction in what I believe is the critical element that fixes the mistake that was made in the 91 Gulf War, and that we did not achieve regime change, which I believe was the proper direction all along. And I think that time, 12 years and 18 UN resolutions, 17 UN resolutions later, were borne out as we sit today on the brink of war, unfortunately, that we should have achieved regime change some time ago. That is why I have crafted the resolution as it stands to not reflect war, but rather to reflect efforts at removing one of the most despotic and despicable dictators in the world's history. And I have a very long litany of resolutions and facts and figures regarding Saddam Hussein's years as the ruler of his country. And I would rather not go into them unless it is necessary, but rather to say that Edmund Burke, who was a great 18th century Scottish philosopher and a British parliamentarian, said, "All that is necessary for the forces of evil to win in the world is for enough good men to do nothing." And that is why I think it is important that we support this president, this administration, our troops in achieving the removal of this man from power. Because as Edmund Burke noted, we have the example of Neville Chamberlain in 1939 coming back from a meeting with Adolf Hitler saying, "We have peace in our time." And we all know what happened after that. The world had an opportunity to stop a truly dangerous man at an early time. And unfortunately, it did not do so. That, I believe, is the rationale for the reasoning why Saddam Hussein should be removed from power. And that is why I've drafted this legislation today. I think that it is important that we make a very, very strong statement as a legislature. Because I was asked today, actually, by a reporter, why would we do this? Why does it matter? Well, it matters because it's very personal for me. Because about 3 weeks ago, I sent off, and Representative Close was there with us, an engineering battalion from Albany of about 200 people, men and women of all ages, living their lives peacefully in the Oregon National Guard serving us. And they're somewhere in the Middle East right now. They're willing to go to war for us. And one of those people is a kid I grew up with. Now, he's not a kid anymore like me. We're of the same age. We're both 44. He has a family. And he was leaving his family behind, and I witnessed their very, very tearful parting. And it spoke a lot to my heart about the dedication, the professionalism, and the commitment of not only our professional active duty soldiers, but clearly our reservists and our National Guardsmen. That really meant a lot to me, and I think it's important that we support them and that we make a statement, as symbolic as it may be, that we support the sacrifices that they're going to make on our behalf, just to leave and stage for what may turn into an eventual military conflict. I think that's why it's important that we do this. I think it has been bold on the part of the president to rattle the sabers that he has. It is still my hope, and I'll be very honest with you, that sometime in the next few hours, war will be averted by Saddam Hussein deciding to leave his country. I do not think that will be the case. But it is my hope that it can still happen. So it is my desire that we move this resolution forward to tell the Congress of the United States, the President, that we support our troops for whatever action is necessary, either in staging or perhaps military conflict, to remove this horrible and ugly man from power. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would submit to you the dash two amendments to this piece of legislation, which if you would like to follow, I actually don't have a copy of the printed bill. It appears that someone took that and hasn't returned it to me. So I will only have a draft copy, but I will tell you that in the final paragraph, we want to delete the word praise and insert the word acknowledge. Thank you. And that would be on line number 10. Delete the word praise and insert the word acknowledge. And on line 11, delete the word their efforts to remove and insert the victorious removal of. And then adding another subsection that praises the courage, dedication, professionalism, and sacrifices of the men and women of the armed forces of the United States and their families in the defense of freedom. Recognizing that this is a tremendous sacrifice on the part of the men and women that protect us in our military forces. So with that, Mr. Chair, that's my reasoning for bringing this before you, and I would ask that you respectfully pass out this resolution as with the proposed amendments in the Dash 2 amendment. And I also want to thank Representative Barnhart for bringing me thoughtful and provocative suggestions on this matter.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I don't have any questions, but I too would just like to support the resolution and also thank Representative Barnhart. I think he improved a little bit on the language, and I believe that it reads much better. I want to tell Representative Krupp that one of the newsmen compared the president to the sheriff in the old western town who told the bad guys they had until sundown to get out of town. And I thought that was a pretty good analogy.
Anything further?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Backlund.
And continuing Representative Verger's thought, we could perhaps call this the, this is awful, the gunfight at the OK Corral.
All right.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, whatever moniker you choose to place on this is fine with me, as long as we clearly tell our president and our troops that we support them and our Oregon Guard members that are in harm's way today.
Thank you. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When I looked at this resolution yesterday, I had some serious problems with it. And I very much appreciate Representative Krupp's willingness to make amendments, because I want to get as much support as we can in the House for our armed forces and the men and women who fight for the United States and who keep us safe. The concern that I had with the resolution has been ameliorated. I wouldn't say it's been ended, but it's been ameliorated by the amendments that in the Dash 2s. I personally, and this is something we haven't talked about here because this resolution is really beyond the purview of what the legislature generally deals with, seeing as how we don't have a Foreign Affairs Committee. We normally leave foreign affairs matters to the President and to Congress and to the Secretary of State. But we all have our opinions, and my opinion has been and continues to be that the President has taken extremely bold and perhaps unnecessary steps in pursuing the process of removing Saddam Hussein from power. Now, that's not to say I disagree with his, in the end result he wants, because I agree with it completely. Saddam Hussein should be removed from power. But when the world powers have such disagreements about the methods that are involved, it leaves me with a pause. But if this resolution had come up a week ago, I'd oppose it. But we didn't come up a week ago. It came up today, and it comes up in the face of an imminent invasion called for by the President of the United States. He's made his decision. Whether I agree with it or not doesn't matter. The fact is that he's made that decision, and I think it's the responsibility of those of us who have positions of responsibility in government, even though it's not related to foreign policy, to support the courage, dedication, professionalism, and sacrifice of our troops and their families. And I hope that that clarifies my position, at least on the measure, on the resolution, in case anybody should care to know what my views are. I'm very concerned with how we got here. But having gotten here, we have to follow through with dispatch get to the result that that is necessary quickly, protect our troops, protect the Iraqis to the extent we can, and bring our troops safely home. The time for the conversation as to whether the process thus far has been a good one or a poor one is a political discussion that we'll have next year. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Anything further from the committee? Representative Krupp, anything to add?
Well, Mr. Chair, I thank you for the opportunity to bring this concept forward, and I would again urge unanimous movement of this resolution as amended. Thank you.
Thank you. And we will then close our public hearing and open a work session on House Resolution 2.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Close.
I move the Dash 2 amendment into H.R. 2.
Okay. Representative Close has moved the Dash 2 amendments to H.R. 2. Any discussion? Any objection? So moved. And Representative Close?
Mr. Chair, I move H.R. 2 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Close has moved H.R. 2 as amended to the floor with the House with a due pass recommendation. Any objection? Actually, no. We'll actually take a roll call on that. Sorry. Go ahead.
Representative
Backlund.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart. Aye. Representative Close.
Aye.
Excused.
Representative Berger.
Aye.
Chair Doyle.
Aye. And resolution passes. Motion passes, and we will have Representative Krupp carry this to the floor. Thank you. Work session then is closed. And we will now return to House Bill 2547. Again, entering, I guess, still work session at this point. And John Britton, come forward, please. Thank you for coming up, Mr. Britton. Now, this shows that the legislative fiscal analysis was actually prepared by Cindy Jones and reviewed by you. Or
correct.
We got.
Yeah. For the record, I'm John Britton, and I work in the legislative fiscal office. And I reviewed this the fiscal impact statement on House Bill 2547. And Cindy Jones, who is the legislative analyst, is in another hearing right next door.
Okay. Can you just at least provide us an overview right now as to how this fiscal analysis came about and where the information came from that you used, what decisions were made to assign whatever dollar figures
sure.
you did?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. The process for fiscal impact statements is generally that the agency provides an initial cut at how much a fiscal impact or how much money a particular bill would have on its budget. And obviously in this one, the most significant fiscal impact has to do with the Department of Human Services. My understanding from Cindy is that we initially received a fiscal impact on this bill of about $1.1 or $1.2 million. And we've questioned those figures and come up with a much lower fiscal impact, looks like about $282,000. Most of it is, as you can see by looking at the next biennium, 2005 through 7, one-time costs, primarily associated with developing a new system that would capture the additional information that is required under this particular bill, and also a person that would make sure that the system is up and running and that the process of submitting data and keeping it up to date and making sure that a new database is working properly. So these are primarily one-time startup costs with respect to this particular bill. If you turn to the second page, I want to make sure that you're clear on what costs were included in the fiscal impact. The second paragraph talks about, or ends with a statement, LFO believes the 10 one-page publication could be translated into two different languages. My understanding is that the bill requires the information to be translated into languages with that are used by population of 2% or more. And I'm not sure if Cindy actually checked the population data. This was my guess that we've got to develop information for people who speak English, and you've got to develop information for people who speak Spanish as well. That is a cost of $20,000. LFO also used the assumption that black and white copies were all that were necessary, and that's a $10,000 cost. So there's about $30,000 discussed in that paragraph. The next paragraph down talks about the need for a new system. According to DHS, the current system uses antiquated programming language and is impossible to modify. This cost of $169,500 is the cost of modifying the entire system to capture what is currently required as far as information and also the new information that the bill would require. So the bill, in a sense, triggers, according to DHS, the need for a new system. The current system cannot be modified. That's what they're telling us.
Mr. Chair.
Okay, yes, Representative Close.
Thank you. Joanne, I would like to sit down with those people and find out how they arrived at this. Can you give us the names of the people that gave this information in DHS so that we could question them?
Mr. Chair and Representative Close, I can't give you the names. I don't know who they are, but we can certainly find out who they were. Yeah.
All right.
At DHS, absolutely.
Go ahead.
The next one, DHS included a cost for creating a secure website of about $76,000. We only included a cost of $5,000. LFO believes the secure website is nothing more than the ability to read only, and that's an estimate of ours of about $5,000. So that also was included in the fiscal impact, not the $76,000. The DHS had estimated that they would need a principal contributor, one, to maintain the website and the registry. We lowered that cost. We had believed that a temporary research analyst can get this thing going and make sure that a new program is used appropriately and the database is developed properly. So we've included a cost of about $58,000. And that, to my count, gets us to about 260-some-odd thousand. My belief, although it's not mentioned here, but I believe in pulling the whole thing together, was that we also added some services and supply costs for this one research analyst of about $15,000 or $20,000.
Okay.
So, again, this is primarily one-time costs in nature, at least the way I would characterize them, and the lion's share of that is in this new information management system.
Representative Close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, again, says the computer language is antiquated. Do you know which computer language it is?
Mr. Chair and Representative Close, I don't.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The website that we're talking about in the fourth paragraph on page two, what's that for?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Barnhart, my reading of the bill, I guess, was somewhat different than the DHS estimate. My reading was to say that we're going to post information that's required in the bill on a website that could be read by people. In other words, they would be referred to a website and could review information that was specified in this bill.
Paul? So the purpose of the website is not to, as a part of the reporting process, There's no back and forthness about it. It's simply supplying information.
Mr. Chair and Representative Barnhart, that's unclear to me because, as I understood, the $169,000 system would be web-based. That is, that the information could be provided electronically from a provider into this particular database through some kind of web-based portal. But I think that the other website is simply a read-only. It's for informational purposes and would be minimal cost.
Okay, an additional follow-up, if I may. So the $169,500 is the estimate not only for the development of the database, but also for the communication system that will allow it to be used.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Barnhart, I would agree, but I don't know that for a fact. I would want to talk to DHS further about that.
And I ask that because if these two paragraphs hook together, then indeed a secure website is necessary in order to transmit data securely into the server from for reporting purposes. And that's really the reason I'm asking this series of questions.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair and Representative Barnhart, if we're going to be collecting data over electronically through a website, absolutely it has to be secure. The question in my mind is what you just asked, and that is, does the 169 encompass the 76,000?
Essentially, that's the
right.
Question.
And I don't know the answer to that for sure. So we need to find that one out.
Anything further? Close,
Mr. Chair. I think we need to further explore this to find out if there's an existing system as well, and if there are websites and if there are secure websites that DHS already has. That isn't clear to me, so that would be my question.
Okay. And other questions, Representative Berger.
Mr. Chairman, I guess my question would be, because this is or could be considered a new program with physical impacts, do we know where the governor's office stands on this bill?
I think we do, but not because of the fiscal impact.
Okay.
So, but no, we. I think the point that Representative Close has made, especially with this being her bill, is that she does want to explore some of these fiscal issues before we move it out of committee.
Okay.
And that would be one of those questions to ask as well.
I do have one more, if I may.
Representative Barnhart.
Question. Thank you, sir. This analysis is an attempt to describe the costs to the state government, not the increased costs that might be incurred by providers or by individuals seeking services as a result of the increased requirements of the bill on their activities.
Mr. Chair and Representative Barnhart, that's correct.
And then a follow-up. So do we have any idea what that cost is?
Mr. Chair and Representative Barnhart, I don't. No.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Flores.
Thank you. Are there any current reporting requirements from physicians to DHS in regard to services provided?
Mr. Chair and Representative Flores, yes, there are. There is, and this is part of the issue, that the current collection method, as I understand it, is a paper collection method, and that the information is sent into the Department of Human Services, and it's keyed into this antiquated database. But there are existing reporting requirements, that's right. And if your next question is what are they, I don't know the answer to that one either. I'm sorry.
Okay, then other questions? Okay, Mr. Britton, as I look at some of these statements, I guess, looking back to the second paragraph, the second page, talking about the printing costs, and even to your point that LFL believes a 10-one-page publications could be translated into two different languages that cost $20,000. Do you expect that there's a cost to translate this into English?
What?
Where are we?
Mr. Chair, I think it's to it is to develop the text and so on. I don't think that there's a cost of translating in English, sir. No.
So,
at least I hope not.
And I guess it just goes to the point, though, to me, $20,000 to basically do a translation of the bill that's already in print, you know, with the requirements showing in print, to then just translate it into Spanish just seems a little excessive, and I don't know how you would come up with that $20,000 figure.
Well, Mr. Chair, originally the DHS draft impact statement that they gave to us translated this into 9 different languages at a cost of $90,000, and that's stated here. And 9 different languages is what they currently produce most all of their publications into 9 different languages. But the bill only requires those languages spoken by more than 2% of the population.
And then, looking at this data collection system being web-based, I'm kind of confused that although there are reporting requirements, it seems to me that DHS is just, they found a vehicle, I think, like you suggested, that actually allows them to make the entire reform their entire computer system and put it basically the expense of this on the back of this bill as opposed to just what other normal upgrades they may do. And it's almost like they're looking for a reason just to increase or to modify their computer process to get, you know, some authorization through fiscal, using this as the excuse as opposed to just doing a simple request, you know, through their own budgeting process. Does that make sense?
Mr. Chair, it does, but I don't think that they have plans to modify the system anyway. Now, at some point, it probably has to be done, assuming we want to collect different information that is being collected today. Okay. That's my assumption. This is, DHS has a number of programs that are very antiquated, I can tell you that. Okay. And this is one of them, I guess.
So if, in essence, I mean, as I've read the bill, basically we're, the form that physicians already have to fill out whenever there's an abortion, they have to report certain things. I mean, we're basically adding 5 more boxes that they have to check off. Has the DHS given you any indication that there are other alternatives, I guess, to get those 5 questions answered and reported? I mean, it seems to me that if it's just 5 more keystrokes, that you can do that on a standalone computer and, you know, spit out a report at the end of the year just on those 5 questions. I mean, why go through developing a whole new system and process just to add a couple of questions?
And Mr. Chair, I don't know the answer to that question. I think that their view of this was to say we want to have the capability of taking all of the current information that's required and new information and make sure that it's integrated. And this is their estimate at a cost. I think that if it's the committee's desire, we can sit down with them and talk to them about it, and talk to them about alternative technical solutions, if that's what you'd like to pursue, and get the full story. Because I admit I'm not an information systems person on this.
Okay,
Mr. Chair.
And then, if I can just ask one more question on the estimate for the temporary research analyst. Do you consider that to be, I mean, is that for a full year period?
That's for, Mr. Chair, it's for 18 months. We're assuming that this thing would be starting up the end of the year, assuming it the at the end of the current year. and would run for 18 months until the thing is operating systematically and operating properly. And after that, this is a temporary position, and the person would go away.
What do you envision that this person would do? I mean, full time, 18 months,
mm-hmm.
to see how people are answering these extra five questions. I mean, when we're talking, I think it's generally about 14,000 abortions per year. I mean, I'm just trying to do the math on those five questions. I mean, that just seems, maybe we're just kind of getting back to our time in the 90s when we were not really questioning what our new state employees are doing. We just go ahead and authorize the position. And to me, a full-time position for 18 months to do just this kind of work seems pretty excessive. And just excessive amount of time and commitment for the state.
Well, Mr. Chair, I've never operated a system like the one that's contemplated here. My belief is that it takes more than a short time, and I guess I would say 3 to 6 months, to make sure that the system is operating properly and that the data that you are receiving is correct and accurate. Now, whether it takes full time for 18 months, I don't know for sure, but that was our estimate as to what was a reasonable cost associated with making sure that the system was operational and working properly.
Okay. Now, you weren't here at the beginning as we were discussing what are the -7 amendments, and in essence, those -7 amendments eliminate the, I guess, the additional negligence claims that could be made against physicians and against nurses. And I would think that eliminates the analysis you have on the Board of Nursing issue and probably even on the Judicial Department.
Yes, and there's $1,000 related to the Board of Nursing that would otherwise be covered through their fee revenue. And the Oregon Judicial Department believes that the fiscal impact on the courts is indeterminate, so that would be just out. But there are no dollars in our fiscal impact for that particular piece, the Judicial Department.
Okay, and then the only final thing for me is that, I guess as you were talking about DHS, is this, and what division of DHS would you perceive this?
Mr. Chair, this is a public health program now within the health services cluster. So DHS was reorganized, or is in the process of reorganizing, and the health division, which is the one that used to collect this, is now the public health program within the health services cluster.
Okay. So I guess it would seem fair to say then that where we've had our public health officer come in and actually testify against this bill in the past, he's saw that there wasn't any other way to get around this bill. I mean, he's throwing a $1.1 million estimate at us. It just seems like it's just another way to try to kill this bill. No comment?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Can't comment on that.
Representative Close, did you have something further?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question again on the Internet question. I believe in Section 6 of the bill, the use of the Internet is for making the information available, but the two-way communication I do not believe is in the bill. And I wanted to ask, John, where it talks about Oregon Health Sciences University, it says OHSU currently requires written informed consent on all procedures performed. So do you know if that is an electronic system that OHSU uses, or is that hard copy written pieces of paper that they're collecting?
Mr. Chair and Representative Close, I don't know the answer to that.
Thank you.
Okay, anything further? Representative Backlund?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your line of questioning. And it takes me back to January of 2002. I received a number of emails, and I read in a paper that that DHS had just expended $12 million for a new computer system. Does anyone else recall that?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, my goodness, I read here, we have a suggestion here, and all of a sudden it's $169,500 for a new system. And yet, perhaps you could explain. It's just kind of disappointing.
Representative Barnhart.
Well, I just a comment about the comment from Representative Backlund. DHS. I was served on the health committee in the last session, so I'm familiar with some of this. And the reorg. DHS has a large number of different computer systems, which have been developed over a variety of periods of time for a variety of reasons. In the area of service outreach, for example, where they're trying to reorganize their outreach programs, there might be five or six different incompatible systems which are operating now, none of which can talk to each other. All of them obsolete. All of them designed with proprietary software. I have no idea at all whether the number that we're talking about is an accurate number, but it's perfectly believable to me that this is a proprietary system which is obsolete and nobody knows how to fix it, because that's true in other parts of that very large department now that I do know about. I have another bill in another committee which is outside of the range to try to fix some of that issue over the long haul, because our system is built up in a very strange kind of organic way, and parts of the system don't talk to each other. It's very complicated and wasteful.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Britton. If we can just have you hold on. We're going to discuss a little bit the Dash 7 amendments, and at least if there's other questions to respond to, might see if we can get you to
sure.
do that. Let's see. Ms. Atterbury, do you want to comment on...
I just have one particular comment on the website. I was surprised to hear that somehow or another it was presumed that there needed to be a communication back and forth. The bill is intended that this just be an information site that they can go to and look at. There needs to be no response by the viewer. This bill is so written that the girl is offered the ability to look at the website. That is all that's needed in this bill. Whether she looks at it or doesn't look at it is then out of the physician's hands. He doesn't care, except that she needs to say, or she actually doesn't even need to say that she saw it. So if part of this cost includes the fact that she needs to respond some way mechanically, that's completely unnecessary.
Okay. Before you go, see if there's any questions on the Dash 7s. No? Okay. Thank you, Ms. Atterbury. Any further comments, colleagues?
On the Dash 7?
In fact, let's... I think we can entertain a motion to accept the Dash 7s. Representative Close. Remove the Dash 7s.
And Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 7 amendments into 2547.
Okay. Representative Close has moved Dash 7 amendments to House Bill 2547. Further discussion?
I would just like to make one comment. By eliminating Section 8, what you have done is throw the total responsibility onto the woman. She does have the right to sue, but that is expensive, and you have to hire an attorney. And by taking out these other options, I think it makes it more difficult for women who may not have had the informed consent that they needed. So, I am supporting that, but I think it's unfortunate that we don't also have the other options, just because of the cost to women.
Okay, thank you. Further comments? Okay.
This is comments just on the Dash 7?
On the Dash 7, yes. Okay. It has been, Dash 7 amendments have been moved to be adopted to House Bill 2547. Ms. Mullins will have a roll call vote on that.
Representative Backlund?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Close?
Both aye.
President Morris.
Aye.
President Melissa Anderson. President Berger.
Aye.
Chair Doyle.
Aye. Dash sevens are adopted. And at this point, those are the only amendments before us. And in light of the fiscal impact statement, I'm not ready to move the bill out of committee yet. I think there are some questions that have to be answered still. And we will take this up again on Thursday, which is the 20th of March. And see if we can get some of those answers in the meantime. And no matter what, we will be looking for some additional information at that work session on Thursday as well, relating to that. But I mean, you will get from either Legislative Fiscal Office or from our Public Health Division. So with that, we close the work session on 2547. And without anything further, committee is adjourned.